Listen up, ladies and gentlemen.
This is
the Masters Podcast. All my life I wanted to fly like the birds that you see way up in the sky. Making circles in the morning sun, flying high in the sky till the day is done.
I can't break away.
Like a child in his fantasy, punching holes.
Episode 54 of the Cinemasters Podcast. As always, I am Daniel Janes.
I'm Jacob Lynn.
And I'm Todd Crouch.
Yeah, Andrew was going to join us, but work happened. Had a late night and then had to go in early, so that sucks. We miss you, but you'll be back. And I hope work doesn't suck too much. So, yeah, this week we are talking about one of the acting greats of the last several decades who's been in epically awesome movies and some complete and utter shit, so it'll be fun. I think we have a pretty fairly wide range of his movies, but yeah.
Yeah, at least in time we have a, you know, our movies span decades.
That is true. That is that we did a good job of that, I will say.
Yeah, go us.
Yeah, but we'll get to Keanu later. First, let's talk some trailer action. Looks like Jacob, you're up first.
Sure. Yeah. So this week for the trailer news section, I'm talking about the newest cinematic universe to be graced upon us, which is, strangely enough, going to be the Ghostbusters cinematic universe, apparently. Over the past couple weeks, this has kind of come forth in various different news stories. As most people know, Paul Feig is doing an all-female-led Ghostbusters. And there was a bunch of, I guess, there's a kerfuffle about how it's going to be a reboot and not a sequel in line with the other ones. And part of the reason that is, apparently, as it's come out now, is that they're wanting to do a cinematic universe in and of themselves. So according to all Paul Feig's statements, he doesn't have anything to do with it, really. He's focusing on the one that he's doing right now. But Ivan Reitman and Sony have plans for not only other films, but also TV shows and that sort of thing. And the most recent news that's come out is that the Russo brothers are apparently going to do a more male-centric Ghostbusters, but it's not quite the people that you know, we may have had in mind. I think they're talking about Channing Tatum as being a part of it, and you know, he doesn't quite fit in with the original cast, as most people would know. But I'm obviously a big fan of Ghostbusters, the sequel less so, the bits I've seen of the TV show even less so. I'm a big fan of Paul Feig, and so I think that his female-centered Ghostbusters movie has about as good a chance as being good as any movie he directs, which is a pretty good chance. But I think people need to kind of slow their roll on the cinematic universe thing, and just because it works well for Marvel doesn't mean it's going to work well for everybody. But I don't know what you guys think about that.
I like Ghostbusters. I think the female version is going to be great. I wish, like, the cinematic universe, I'm kind of sick of hearing, oh yeah, another cinematic universe. It makes me wary that they're pulling the same thing Sony did, where they're like, yeah, Amazing Spider-Man was a thing, so now we're going to do a sequel and make a cinematic universe. And, you know, the sequel came out and everyone was like, this is the worst movie we've ever seen. And what are you thinking about a cinematic universe? So it's kind of weird that they're going all out without, you know, one under their belt.
And, well, and I remember a couple years ago they were talking about like a, what was it? Doing like a Dracula and a werewolf, like the Wolfman.
Yeah.
You know, and how they were going to have like a classic monsters cinematic universe. They were going to roll out like a Dracula movie and the Wolfman movie and a mummy movie, and then they were going to team up and stuff. And that was a couple of years back, but it's still kind of the same thing where, you know, trying to build these franchises on top of other franchises just because they share a studio doesn't mean it makes sense to do.
Yeah. And the one last thing I want to say on it is that it's a shame that they're not letting the female Ghostbusters stand on its own before announcing the all-male version.
Right.
Because, I mean, yeah, this all-female version is going to be great, at least in some aspect. I mean, it's going to at least be as good as Bridesmaids.
Well, the problem that you have with this that I see is the problem that you have with any kind of female-led movie, which is that it has to carry the weight of every other female-led movie that will ever be made on its back. So if it's a colossal failure financially, they're going to say, oh, this is why you can't have movies with, you know, women in them. Mm-hmm. And now you're saying not only that, but if it fails and it like topples over a future Ghostbusters cinematic universe or something, then you're like, well, not only can we not do that, but look at how big a failure this was. And it kind of doubles up on that, where it's, I mean, not only is it not fair, but it's something that we see over and over and over again.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still going to probably see most of, not all of them, in theaters.
I'll see the first one. I'll see the Paul Feig one.
Yeah. I'll definitely see that one. I will probably see the rest as well, but maybe not, depending on how that one goes. All right. Tyler, anything to say on Ghostbusters?
You guys kind of basically hit everything. I feel so. I didn't want to butt in, you know, repeat the same stuff. But I'm excited for the Paul Feig version. And yeah, I like Channing Tatum. He's proved to be a leading man, you know.
Yeah.
But I would much more like it if they did the standalone all women cast version, and then maybe add them into the second version of it.
Yeah.
Not like, necessarily go a full all male cast and just a completely different movie. Kind of add them together, but I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, we'll see. All right, on to other sequel news that nobody asked for. Remember a few years ago when Kevin Smith was like, yeah, I'm going to do Clerks 3 and then I'm going to be done. Well, yeah, that is not a thing anymore. Because then he went on and did Tusk, and now he's doing Yoga Hosers, which is kind of a spinoff of Tusk. And then he's going to be doing, apparently, Moose Jaws, which is described as Jaws with a moose, which will then be followed by Anti-Claws, which is interesting. But the big news is he's working on a sequel to Mallrats, a Mallrats 2, targeting May 2016 as the start date. So, I don't know. I like Kevin Smith. I've not seen, what's it called? Tusk yet. Didn't get a chance to see it in theaters and haven't found it on Blu-ray yet. And even if I had, I probably wouldn't have time to watch it, being married and having a wife that's not into horror movies or stupid humor like Kevin Smith. So, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting to seeing his career take a dark turn going into the horror genre. It's just kind of full-on into horror.
I thought you were going to talk about a dark turn quality-wise, which I would also agree with. Although Red State I thought was okay.
Yeah, I mean, Red State was pretty fun. I don't know. I can't really judge any of his new stuff because I haven't seen it. I saw Red State once, and then Yeah, most of the other stuff I haven't seen.
I like Red State.
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot with him where I watched a lot of his movies when I was in my early teens, and some of the ones I've rewatched, and I loved them. So I'll go out there and say when I first watched them, I loved them. Had seen them multiple times, loved them. But just as with a lot of movies I've seen, I watched when I was very young, and having rewatched them and being like, well, not sure what young Jacob saw, except for the fact that he was young and didn't know any better. I fear the same with Kevin Smith, where it's just like being, you know, 13, 14, 15, young, immature nerd, and watching those and seeing some, you know, seeing something of myself reflected in it versus like watching them now as an adult. It just worries me a little bit that maybe some of my memories of his movies are with rose-colored glasses, but I did think Red State was okay. You know, I'd give it a slightly positive review, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, up until Red State, the last few of his movies were him trying to do what he thought people were going to enjoy instead of doing Kevin Smith. So that's where some of the decline in quality went.
Cop Out wasn't really.
Yeah, that was the peak of that. And then Zack and Miri was him trying to make a Judd Apatow movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. It worked in the sense that it was a Kevin Smith version of a Judd Apatow movie, but that is not as good as, well, it's exactly as good as it sounds, which is not great. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that he's still doing things and excited about the things that he's doing, because I've listened to a lot of his podcasts and I feel like I know him, and he's kind of a cool dude in what I know of him, so. That is good. Clerks 3 is filming this May. So cool. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how things go with him. But until then, Tyler.
I have
even more sequel news.
Yeah, well, this week news came out that the new Star Wars spinoff movie got a title. It's called Star Wars Rogue One. This is a film directed by Gareth Edwards, known for Monsters and Godzilla, his better known films. It is starring Felicity Jones, and during their, I guess, conference call or something with the board or whatever, it was mentioned that with the concept art that was given, it was shown to resemble the Halo video game. here's an excerpt from kind of what they said. I'll read this really quick. And then there was one, Rogue One, concept art heard around the world. Although I'm quite shocked it hasn't been released yet, my personal take on it is evoked concept art of a video game. It personally screamed Halo to me. It was very dark and done in green, so it evoked the idea that it was being done under the cloak of night. Dozens of figures and fatigues appeared to be storming something with a strange helicopter's vehicle open on the sides in the background, releasing more troops. That's kind of what a person from Stitch Kingdom said. And that movie's coming in December 16th of next year. And then also, we got the news that Star Wars 8, which is being written and directed by Rian Johnson from Looper, and that's coming May 26th of 2017. It's exactly 40 years and a day after Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. So, nothing really much on that as to what's going on, because we haven't even seen Star Wars Episode 7, so we don't know what to expect from Star Wars Episode 8, but yeah, so some kind of big news, I guess, going on in the Star Wars universe. So that's, yeah. I guess it's pretty cool. So
3 movies in 18 months.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too, but I still remember the last line of Fanboys.
It's gonna be crazy.
It sucks.
Yeah. Either way, it's gonna be crazy. If it's good, bad, or indifferent, it's gonna be nuts. But yeah. I mean, hopefully, it's good. Obviously.
I'm honestly it'd be nice. A little bit more excited about Rogue One and Episode 8 than I am about Episode 7 at this point. Which is awful, because I hate the fact that I even know about Rogue One in Episode 8.
It's sad. I think I feel kind of indifferent as far as liking or looking forward to one more than the other. Just as a whole, though, I think it's sad that I'm looking forward to these more because I know that George Lucas isn't involved. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's kind of obvious, but it's also a sad state of affairs when it's like the guy who birthed this and tried to shepherd it and who is responsible for all this joy and goodness that came from Star Wars and like good riddance, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs.
Sweet. Well, that's it for news, I guess.
Hell yeah.
All of those movies that we talked about are going to make so much money. It's absurd.
Oh, lots. All the money.
Yeah.
Except for Mallrats 2, probably.
Yeah.
That'll make all the pennies.
Yeah. It'll make a couple bucks. It'll make more than I make in 1 year. That is,
I just want like a percent of what Star... 1% of what Star Wars makes. Just 1%.
Right.
And I'll be happy.
Hi, I'm Phil! Ask Preston! Ask Choir! And this is Ted!
All right, let's go ahead and dive into our future presentations. Yeah, I guess I'm gonna go first. Actually, we should switch you two around.
Yeah, going chronological.
Make it that. Yeah, we'll go chronologically speaking.
Some nice segues.
So, I'm gonna start off with a little film that came out about 25 years ago. Which is crazy. What
older than me?
It might be older than me, but only by months.
I'm older than it, so
yeah.
There we go.
That's because you're old.
I know.
You're old.
No, you're not. Yeah, it's about 9 months older than me. Came out in February of 1989, and I'm of course talking about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yeah, about two high school losers, I guess, who are about to fail their big history exam when we flash to the future and see George Carlin talking about how he has to go back in time and help Bill and Ted, Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan, to complete their final exam, which is essentially telling the audience what historical figures would think of modern day San Dimas, California. And he does this by bringing a telephone, a phone booth time machine back and sending them on a journey, an excellent adventure to go collect historical figures to bring to their presentation, and hilarity ensues. Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't know. This is kind of a weird movie to talk about because on the one hand, it's like really, really dumb humor a lot of the times. And then it's got like the really brilliant mall scene where they after they've brought back Sigmund Freud and Socrates Johnson and Beef Oven, Genghis Khan, a whole bunch of people, they're all just running around the mall doing crazy shit, and Beethoven's like rocking out on these electric keyboards. Joan of Arc is teaching a aerobics class. And Abraham Lincoln gets in trouble for stealing a beard and a hat from one of those old-timey photo places. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of fun and kind of a good history lesson without being anything close to a good history lesson.
Yeah, I've seen... What is it? What's the sequel called?
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Bogus Journey. Yeah. I've seen each of them once, and it was in like 7th or 8th grade, and I just remember even then them being kind of ludicrous, but funny. I just never had an inkling to go back and watch them, although there's been sequel or reboot talk of Bill and Ted even recently, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Why can't anybody come up with anything new? Why is so many reboots?
That's a very good question.
Because we love them. We eat them up. We all just said that we were going to go watch all
time. Yeah, true. I know.
That's exactly why.
It is, but you know, it's just like, come up with an original idea. I feel like there's no original ideas anymore.
Gotta talk to Inception guy, Christopher Nolan and Guillermo del Toro. They're the two off the top of my head that are making at least the big original ideas still.
Yeah. So. Well, Star Wars would be original, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope.
In a sense that it's a new direction, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's a fun movie. It's one of the better jokey time travel movies. I mean, there's a lot of time travel movies, and a lot of them are crap, but this is one of the good comedy time travel movies, strictly comedy speaking. Like, Back to the Future is incredible and has really funny moments, but, like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's got Keanu Reeves, man.
Yeah, I guess this is an episode about Keanu, so we should talk about his performance more so than the movie itself.
California boy.
Yeah, and he plays this total, surfer dude, just like completely ditzy and just, I don't know.
He plays Keanu, or what everybody thinks Keanu is.
Keanu Reeves as Ted Theodore Logan. Whoa, excellent. Party on, dudes. I don't know. This movie is kind of the, like, my religion in the sense that, like, strictly in the sense that, like, I live on the thing, the basis of be excellent to each other and party on, dudes. Like, that is my mantra of life.
Way to save that one.
Yeah. Not like I worship this movie, just in the sense that, like, that if everyone followed those two rules, like, the world would be incredible. And that's kind of, I guess, the point of this movie, is to say, like, you should just be excellent to each other and have some fun. And, you know, high school isn't really that big of a deal. But it is. You should, you know, study and don't do drugs and whatnot. All those things. I don't know. This is getting derailed quickly, so I guess the reason I chose Bill and Ted is it's, besides The Matrix, this is the movie of his that I've seen the most. And the sequel is all right. It takes everything fun and ridiculous in the first one and goes... I guess the best way to explain it would be they take it to 11. And this week they released the first issue of a comic book.
Wow.
That's called Bill and Ted's Most Triumphant Return. And it takes place after the second movie. And it's about them getting into more shenanigans. So... I mean, if you like the first movie, go watch the second movie. If you like the second movie still, then go read the comic. I guess is where we can end that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I'll say I had never seen the second one until when I don't know if you guys remember Pizza Hut, when you would order a pizza, you could pick a DVD.
That came with your
meal at the time. Like you could, if you ordered a certain amount of, like, I guess spent enough money or a certain pizza or something, you could pick a movie and a movie would come and you could watch it. They had like Mr. Mom, they had some other movies, and then they had Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And so we had never seen Bill and Ted's Bogus, or I had never seen it, or it had been a long time, so I convinced my parents to get it. And so we got it one night and we watched it. I mean, I don't think it's as good as the first one, but it took some dark turns, you know, and dealing with like all the, I guess it was like the death, right? It was like the Grim Reaper, yeah, and everything.
Grim Reaper, yeah, joins their band.
Yeah, Grim Reaper joins their band and everything like that. And it just kind of, it got weird. It, like you said, they took it to 11. But I do remember watching that when we got Pizza Hut one night, so.
That's awesome. I wish Pizza Hut, right? Still did that. But, you know, everyone has Netflix now.
Yeah, that's true. That's
funny. So, yeah. This was kind of his first big movie, at least that he was a leading role in, I think. This came out the same year as Parenthood, which was another pretty big movie of the day. And it's all, another great movie where he plays kind of a screw-up. But, yeah, it's fun.
Excellent! Yay!
All right, let's move on chronologically to 10 years later. Jacob, take it away.
Yeah, so the movie that I chose to rewatch for this is 1999's The Matrix, which was probably, because I'm pretty sure I watched this before Bill and Ted, so this must have been my introduction to Keanu, and I distinctly remember watching this at one of my buddy's houses after basically all of my friends had already seen it once, twice, or three times even. It was kind of like the movie that I hadn't quite watched yet that everybody was really into and that was going to blow my mind and all that stuff, which it kind of did. I mean, it's even at that time, I remember it being kind of an insane movie and one that I was trying to explain it to my fiance because she had never seen it or heard about it.
That's a shame.
That's yeah, kind of ridiculous, yeah. Really.
I thought so too, but but so looking into that, I realized I didn't know a whole lot about, you know, just not only financial but critically how well it did, because I was just too young to really care about that sort of thing. But it had a budget of $63 million and ended up making north of $450 million worldwide, which is obviously pretty huge. But on top of that, it was nominated and won 4 Oscars. Now, they were for the things you'd think they were for, like visual and sound mixing and that sort of thing. But still, I mean, 4 Oscar nominations, 4 Oscar wins is pretty big.
Yep.
And it was the highest grossing R-rated movie of 1999 as well, according to Box Office Mojo. So I thought that all that was pretty cool just to get out of the way beforehand. But having watched it the other day, I can tell you that, I mean, it stands up to the test of time. Like I said, I watched it when I was in probably eighth or ninth grade, something like that, without thinking about it too much. And I remember liking it. And then it was obviously on TBS and TNT reruns all the time. I'm not sure how much it is anymore, but I remember years ago that it seemed like they ran it every week. And so I saw it probably 10 or 15 times, you know, cut for television on one of those stations. But it'd been quite a while since I'd seen it. Probably, God, I don't know, probably a good 4, 5, 6 years. And bought it a year or so ago when it was on, the Blu-ray was on sale at Target, and it's just been sitting on my shelf unwatched since then. So this gave me a good reason to watch it, and it really holds up. I mean, everything holds up about it as far as I'm concerned. The acting is all good considering the type of film it is. The The fight choreography holds up about as much as you could hope that something this old would, especially considering like all the bullet time and the martial arts that they had to do. I mean, this was a groundbreaking film when it came out.
The technology that they created for this movie, basically.
Exactly, and what you see when you, or at least what I've noticed, and I think I stand with the consensus here, which is that a lot of the films that came out when we were kids and that come out nowadays, if we look at them, you know, in the future, because they use so much visual effects, and visual effects don't hold up quite as well as the practical effects of a long time ago. So if you watch movies from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, the practical effects hold up a whole lot better now than movies from the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s. But I really thought that The Matrix held up, especially when you consider that. And it was just really intense and fun movie. And it had been long enough that I remembered, obviously, the big action pieces, the big set pieces, but enough distance had been there that I didn't exactly remember how the things lined up. And there were some pieces and parts that I didn't quite recall. So it made the viewing experience pretty fun, for me at least.
Yeah.
Good old Neo.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It is a great movie.
And every time I watch it, I have to remember that he doesn't actually say, "Dude, I know Kung Fu." He just says, "I know Kung Fu."
Yeah.
And then because he's Keanu, everybody always makes fun of him and says, "Dude, I know Kung Fu."
Yeah.
But he really actually delivers the line fairly straight.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just a funny aside, I guess.
I mean, everybody else gives Keanu a hard time saying that he's not the best actor in the world. And, you know, actually, he's a really good actor, you know, when you give him the right stuff and the right situation. He can act. This movie, I love this movie. I think everybody in it, the Wachowski siblings, did a fantastic job. You know, and this was their kind of their foray into the world of cinema, kind of like this put them on the map, you know, with everything, the stunts. This is a great movie. But I personally like the second one the most, but Matrix.
Blasphemy.
You're definitely in the minority there. However, the second one definitely holds up almost better on a second watch. And third watch, you know, 10 plus years later than it did at the time of its release. And the third one is still, it's a good Dragon Ball Z movie.
And to me, it's really, I mean, this is the perfect be careful what you wish for, because this movie was so good, especially film nerds, nerd nerds, you know, everybody just loved it so much, and they wanted more, and we got it. And, it's not that bad, and consider it's a blah, 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 you know. But The Matrix, the original one, is a groundbreaking, best in a decade, maybe even more than in the running for something more than that film. And it really is be careful what you wish for. I mean, the way that the movie ends with, you know, him at the phone booth and then him taking off and flying, you're like, holy shit, like, you know, this is crazy. And then when you get the other two movies, it just can't quite live up to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The games were badass. Enter the Matrix was a great game.
I do remember playing the games.
Enter the Matrix is great. I haven't played The Matrix Online or The Path of Neo yet, but then Enter the Matrix was really good. The Animatrix, which is the extended world direct-to-video animation, amalgamation, anthology. I'll go with anthology. Is great if you love the world. It actually does make the third movie a little bit better, knowing some of the backstory and stuff. But it's not necessary to watch. I would definitely not recommend watching everything in one weekend, unless you just don't want your brain to work for like 2 or 3 days afterwards. It's a lot. It's very, very good movie, the first one. And he is exactly what he needed to be in that movie. Tyler, you said the right thing, that he's not, it's not that he's a bad actor, he's just never, doesn't always have the best parts, and he is always, like, really good in what he is, and you can see the range from going from, like, the Bill and Ted era to The Matrix, and how, like, two completely different movies, 10 years apart, and he is perfect in both of them for what is required.
So. Yeah, I have always liked Keanu. I never had a problem with the guy.
Nope.
Me neither. I mean, I've seen a lot of, I mean, Speed, Devil's Advocate's not like the greatest movie, but it was fun watching when I was a teenager. I mean, he's had some pretty good films that he's been good in. I mean, he's not the best actor or my favorite actor, but I don't think he deserves all the grief he gets.
Yeah, I mean, Street Kings was a good movie.
It's just his face, I guess.
Yeah.
There's something about your face. I just want to punch
it. I mean, really, a Scanner Darkly, I mean, it's he's good been movie. In some good movies.
He has. And those movies that we've been talking about are some of the best movies.
Yes. All right. Well, I guess we can move on. So, yeah, 15 years after The Matrix, we get another movie that Tyler's going to talk about.
All right. Well, my movie is Keanu's most recent film, which is John Wick. It's directed by Chad Stahelski and David Licht. And if you didn't know, Chad Stahelski was Keanu Reeves' stunt double in the Matrix movies. So this reunited these two together for this film. John Wick, if you guys don't know what the movie is, basically an ex-hitman comes out of retirement to track down the gangsters that took everything from him. And basically, if you've seen the commercials, you've seen the trailers for the movie, his dog gets killed. These Russian guys come into his house, beat the crap out of him, and kill his dog and leave him dead, basically left for dead. And so kind of, but John Wick had lost some things beforehand. I don't really want to get, or I guess we can get into a little bit. He had lost his wife previously, and she left him a dog, a puppy, on his doorstep to kind of keep him going and not feel so sad. And so he goes attached to the dog, and this Russian gangster mob douchebag played by Alfie Allen, Theon Greyjoy of Game of Thrones, basically wants his car, and Keanu says it's not for sale, or John says not for sale, and so he takes offense to that and then finds where he lives and beats the shit out of him. And so, but basically this movie, it stars a lot of people in it. Keanu Reeves, obviously, Michael Nyquist of Mission Impossible, the girl with the dragon tattoo series, the French version. Alfie Allen, William Dafoe, Dean Winters, and Adrian Pilecki. So it's got some decent sized name people in it. And it kind of sets up this whole universe that he used to be in. Like he's referred into the movie as the boogeyman, the Baba Yaga, which is, I guess, a Slavic term for boogeyman. And it's like this whole world. He goes to this hotel called the Continental, where it's like a safe haven for hitmen and contractors and everything. And kind of you meet a bunch of different people. And and also Ian McShane's in it too, which wasn't really expecting him to be in it. But and it kind of just sets up this whole universe. The choreography, the stunts, and everything. This movie is actually really beautiful, if you think about it. It's very bloody and very, not really bloody, but very violent. There's a lot of. I think the body count gets up to what? I think 117 is what the body. 119 body count. 119 wow. People die in this movie. And you know, and it's kind of it's very well done. There's this one scene where he goes into a bathhouse, trying to find Alfie Allen's character, and just that whole like scene, it's very, very just well shot, well done. And Keanu Reeves, you know, he doesn't do a whole heck of a lot of talking in this movie, but when he does, it kind of makes it count. I saw this movie. Whenever I heard about this and I saw a trailer, I was like, man, Keanu is back. Like, he is back to his form. Like, this is his movie. This is what he's been needing for a while. This is his movie. And when I saw it in theaters, I walked out of theaters with a huge smile on my face. I was like, that movie was awesome. So, yeah, John Wick, it's the first of a trilogy. So...
Really?
Yes, that's what they're saying. It's the first of a trilogy, and because they kind of what they do is that, I mean, they set up a whole thing where there's a lot to go into it. So I'm kind of excited for it. What do you guys have you guys seen this movie? I know it came out last year, but
no, I haven't. It's on my list because it's available, I think, in Redbox, so it's on my
nice. I did not see it, but I've heard many good things. And Wikipedia says he was nominated for a Razzie Redeemer Award for this movie.
I take it that's
a good thing.
That is a good thing.
A previous Razzie nominee who's in a good movie.
You haven't done anything good in a while, but here you have. Oh, so
that's good, I guess.
Basically, Ben Affleck, I think, got one too for Argo.
After Geely.
Yeah. Yeah, after Geely, Redeemer, so he got one for...
Before John Wick, his credits were 47 Ronin, Man of Tai Chi, Side by Side, Day the Earth Stood Still, and that's when you start getting back into, like, Scanner Darkly and Constantine. Well, Constantine's was not a great movie, but he was fine in it, and it was actually an okay movie, just not very... Constantine. Anyways, yeah, John Wick, I hear nothing but good things about it, and I'm excited about it. I didn't know that about the whole, like, world setting up thing. That gets me a little more excited about it, too.
Yeah, no, it definitely just gives you a sense that there's a lot more to bring. It's not just a one-note movie. So, I mean, it's a really good movie, and like I said, it brings back the stunt man to direct him. And I think I read somewhere where Keanu claimed to do 90% of his stunts in the movie. And just the gun work and everything, like, just throughout the whole movie, it's fantastic. It's the best I've seen in a long time. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't really get, like, gory or anything, but there's a lot, I mean, but that's just from shooting people. But it just, and Kevin Nash is in the movie, too.
Big sexy.
Yeah. for anybody a big fan of Kevin Nash, you know, the last time I ever saw him in a movie was The Punisher, which we had talked about.
Magic Mike.
He was in Magic Mike. Never mind. I take that back. I told that Kevin Nash was in Magic Mike.
Yeah, he is.
Speaking of sequels, they're going to be awesome.
Magic.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm skeptical.
I don't know. I'm excited to see that, the John Wick. Anything else on Keanu? Any honorable mentions besides Speed? Which is probably his biggest movie before, or since The Matrix.
I mean, I like Scanner Darkly. Oh, gross.
I liked Constantine. I mean, actually, seeing the show and actually knowing what, because I really never knew Hellblazer very much. actually seeing where you're supposed to be, you know, kind of, yeah, wasn't really how it's supposed to be, but, I mean, I didn't think it was terrible. Hardball.
Oh, and...
Gotta get up to Hardball.
You know, it's not a good movie, but it was a fun movie, at least last time I watched it. The Replacements, where he's the football player.
100% agree with you.
The Replacements,
both
definitely.
That it's not a good movie, but I mean, it is a fun movie.
Yeah.
Point Break.
I don't know if I've seen that all the way through, but yeah. He's done a lot of stuff in the last, I guess, 30 years almost. His first credit looks like One Step Away in 1985, and I guess he did a bunch of commercials back then.
The, God, what's it called? The movie that he directed, or produced rather, about the documentary. God, what's that called?
You talked about it. It's in my Netflix.
Yeah. Side by side. Yeah. Side by side. About film versus digital in the medium. That's something. I mean, he's in it, conducting interviews and stuff. It's a documentary. I've talked about it on this before, but yeah, that was really good actually.
And then he's going to be in a new movie, directed by Eli Roth, called Knock Knock. It's supposed to be like a horror thriller coming out in October.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I saw the teaser trailer. But, I mean, after seeing John Wick, it's got me back on the Keanu train.
Yeah.
You know, kind of down to see whatever he's in, you know, give it a shot. But I'm the biggest fan of Eli Roth, though. Can't take the Hostel movies or all that crap. But he was good in Inglourious Basterds, though.
This is true.
So.
Yeah. I just want to take a second to say that 47 Ronin was awful, and then move on.
I'm glad I didn't watch it then.
I haven't seen it.
I thought it was going to be at least a fun action movie. No, no, no.
Lies.
No. Do they all die?
I don't even know. I don't even care. It was...
Were there at least 47 Ronin in it?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. That one scene where she, like, floats around and, like, turns into a dragon and stuff. Like, the visual effects on that kind of stuff was really cool. But apart from that, there was little to say about that movie.
Well, that's disappointing. Because I thought it was going to be awesome by the trailers and everything.
Right? I thought, like, this is going to be a fun action movie that I'm going to enjoy sitting through.
Yeah, and then not so much.
maybe if I had actually seen it in theaters, it might be a different story. Slightly different, but no. It was... Pacing was bad. I don't know. He was fine in it, but there just wasn't much to the movie. So.
Isn't that crazy what a movie theater can do to a film, though?
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, if it's strictly like a popcorn action movie, then you just want like loud excitement, big violence on the screen. Watching that on, you know, even like a 50-inch TV is not quite the same. So, yeah, Keanu is good. He's been around for 30 years or so. And
he's an old man.
He's 50.
Yeah, he just turned 50 September 2014. So, yeah, he's done a lot of good work and a lot of bad work, but that's just because he's been working for 30 years. So, bravo, kudos to him. Like it's time for some credits. So, Tyler, what do you got for us?
All right. Well, I just before we started this podcast, I just finished up the last four episodes of Star Wars Rebels, the show on Disney XD, same guys who did the Clone Wars, David Filoni, and it only lasted 15 episodes, but it was a great season so far. If you are a fan of the Clone Wars, then you'll definitely enjoy this show. It has Freddie Prinze Jr. plays one of the characters, and some other people I've really never heard of. But yeah, it's kind of what it's the point of it is, it's bridging the gap from Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope, kind of what's going on in between those movies when the Empire is taking over and then the Rebel forces, the Rebel Alliance is starting to develop and come into fruition and fighting back against the Empire. So yeah, check it out, Star Wars Rebels. And then my other one, let me actually, I can save the other one for the next time. My other one is The 100. Just finished up its second season on the CW. And when I say it's one of the best sci-fi TV shows on television right now. I think it's got a lot of no-name people in it, and then it's got a few names in it. Paige Turco, Desmond from Lost, I forgot his real Henry something, I think that's his name, he's in it. But yeah, really good show. If you haven't seen the first season, it's on Netflix. Definitely give it a shot. So,
yeah, I've actually heard pretty good things about that. I just a couple weeks ago tossed the first season in my Netflix queue. My dad watches it. A lot of people, TV critics I listen to podcasts from, have been kind of shouting from the rooftops about it. Funny enough, the same people who, like, two episodes in said how horrible it was. So apparently it made a turn somewhere in the early episodes.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like a mixture of Lord of the Flies, got some of those elements in the first season, and then kind of just survival and a lot of different stuff. You know, really good show. Definitely worth the watch.
So. Cool. Good suggestions. Is Clone Wars between episode 1 and 2 or 2 and 3?
2 and 3.
Okay. Cool. I've yet to watch all of that, but
I haven't watched any of those.
And then Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Good show. I haven't finished it yet.
I watched the first episode. I thought it was fun. Silly but fun.
Ellie Kemper is great. I love her.
I hear it's 30 Rock take 2, I guess.
It kind of is.
Like the evolution of 30 Rock. So if you miss 30 Rock, then go watch that.
Yeah, I'm planning on running through that sometime probably in the next week or two. 20 some odd minute episodes all on Netflix. Pretty easy to power through, I think.
Yeah.
So
I have to wait until we're done watching Charmed so that we can watch
gross.
That one.
Yeah. I've seen too many episodes of Charmed.
There's some really interesting episodes and then there's some crap.
It's an interesting mythology.
Like most 90s the genre shows. Buffy included.
I used to watch that. I think they had repeats of that.
TNT.
Before or after, repeats of Buffy or something, or Angel or something. I think I got shit sandwiched in there.
sounds about right.
Anyway.
All right.
I'll keep going with the TV. There's one I want to focus on, then a couple I'm just going to shout out afterwards. HBO's The Jinx, about Robert Durst. I think it's called The Jinx, The Lives and Deaths of Robert Durst. The finale airs tonight as we're recording this, so probably as this goes up, a couple days will have passed. It is extremely interesting. I'd heard a lot of people saying that it was going to be an interesting series, and I watched the first episode or two, and we're like, wow, this is pretty good. Watched the third episode, and I was a little shocked. And my fiancée walked through when I was watching part of the fourth episode, and she's like, "Oh, what's going on?" "Oh, I'm watching this show," and kind of explained it to her a little bit. It's a docuseries about a guy who's the suspect in three murders over the past couple decades and hasn't really spent any time in jail and is currently out there. And he had Andrew Jarecki, who's the director of this, directed the documentary Capturing the Freedmans. He also directed a film based on this guy's life, and this guy contacted him and said, "Hey, you want to do some interviews with me?" And he was like, "Sure." And so that's what this series came out of. And so I'm explaining this to her. She's like, "Oh, that sounds really interesting. I want to watch it." So I told her that if she caught up on the first four episodes, we'd watch the fifth and sixth together. And she did. She powered through it, loved it. And we watched the fifth episode together and then the sixth and final episodes tonight. So some crazy stuff happened in the fifth episode, and some crazy real-life news came out today or yesterday, right before the finale aired. And all I have to say is it is captivating, and the dude looks like Satan. I mean, he has black eyes, and he does this weird, like, reptilian lip lick, and he just blinks, like, nonstop. He looks like a reptile. And you can just, I mean, at least as far as we're concerned, you can tell that he's lying through his teeth the whole time. And it's just crazy. And so not only is it interesting, but you're also being like, well, this director is in a room with this guy for hours and hours and hours. Like, how weird must that feel? So that's as much praise as I can heap without going, like, too far off the rails or giving too much stuff away, because it is really interesting. And don't Google Robert Durst, don't Google the Jinx, because it'd be best if you could watch it without knowing the recent news that just happened. You'll find that out in episode 5, or some of it out in episode 5. But I also want to give shout outs to a couple other shows. Better Call Saul, which we brought up before, I'm caught up on, really good. Broad City, it's a sketch-ish comedy show that's in its second season, which I'm catching up on now. It's really funny. And then the Cinemax show Banshee just ended its third season, and maybe its best season. And I've just loved that TV show since, like, the first episode, and I've been watching it the week of ever since, and just really love it.
So is the Jinx kind of like Serial? Like a Serial-esque?
It's been in production a lot longer than Serial, so it's like, I don't want to say, yeah, it's like Serial, it's like a knockoff of it, but it's similar. This guy's been all over the news. Like, I remembered hearing about it, and if anybody's seen The Good Wife, there's a character on The Good Wife who's like a millionaire who Alicia represents, who has, like, probably killed a couple people, but she keeps getting him off, and he's kind of based on this Robert Durst guy. It's a true crime thing, but not a true crime thing, but it kind of maybe becomes a true crime thing. It's interesting. If you can get your hands on it by legal or illegal means, I'd do it.
Interesting.
Yeah, very, never very interesting.
Watched or never paid attention to the trailers of it that aired before Last Week Tonight. But
God, Last Week Tonight is so good.
It's been really good. We realized yesterday that there's been 4 episodes of season 2, so we plowed through, or 5 episodes. We plowed through the first 4. We're going to watch 5 and then maybe 6 tonight, because that should be airing. But yeah, I had no idea that Jinx was actually something interesting.
So good.
But probably have to check that out. As far as those other ones, like Better Call Saul, yeah, obviously is going to be good. Yet to watch.
It's amazing.
Banshee, I've not heard anything about until, like, the last couple months. All of a sudden people are like, "Hey, Banshee," and I'm like, "This is season 3. How come this is the first I'm hearing of it?"
It's on Cinemax. Weird. I mean, I've been kind of watching it, and it's good. And it's like, the one thing that I say about it is, like, it is physically uncomfortable to watch a lot of times in a way that no action films seem to be these days, where when I'm watching the because there's a lot of fights, there's a lot of violence in it, and it is, I would say, NC-17 violence. Insofar as, you know, like PG-13 violence is a dude shoots a gun and then like you cut away so you don't see blood, or just a guy shoots a gun and a bunch of people fall over and you don't see any blood. This is like you hear the bones crack. Like you can see the pain that these people are in. It is like devastating and it has repercussions and main characters die and just all the, yeah, there are real repercussions, even though it's kind of like a hard-boiled, you know, like the it's not a detective story, but it's like those, you know, soft-cover detective stories. Just really, really interesting, really fun to watch. Don't watch it with little kids around. It is on Cinemax.
Me, Cinemax?
Yeah. Well, hey,
I watched the first episode.
Yeah, they're really... They're doing some stuff on that station now.
Yeah. I like the first episode. When I first heard about Banshee, I was like, "This is gonna be a ghost show."
Yeah, it's a weird title.
And then I realized, it's Banshee, Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So cool.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, Cinemax and Stars are the two channels I like never am caught up on because I don't.
I heard Black Sails is really good too.
Right. Yeah.
On Stars.
No,
Vikings. I watched all of Spartacus on Stars, but I only watched.
That's on Netflix. Black
Sails. Yeah.
Yeah, it's back on Netflix. It used to be on Netflix back in the day.
I'm on season 3. I powered through one weekend.
Yeah, and like everybody that was on that show is now on Arrow, so
I know, right?
All right. My recommendations are a little more varied than just TV shows. But the TV shows that I do want to discuss are Justified is in its final season and it's been going super strong.
So good.
It was building until episode 4 and then episode 5 and 6 dropped off like 2 or 3 notches maybe, but they're still better than most episodes of a lot of other television that I watch. That's been really good. Americans has been pretty excellent as well. It's not entirely sure where the season's going, but it's going dark places is pretty much all I can tell. So check those out if you haven't. Justified's kind of hard because it's not on Netflix, which is why it's not as big as Breaking Bad was, because I think it's just as good, if not better.
I think they're on Amazon Prime.
Right. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it, but if you don't, then you have to buy the DVDs, because... although FX has a streaming service if you have the right cable provider, but I don't know
who. Love Justified, caught up on it, and I'm a season behind on the Americans.
I'm a season behind on Americans too.
That's also on Amazon Prime, so you can check those out there. I am currently reading As You Wish, a memoir by Cary Elwes about the filming of The Princess Bride. It's really fun. First few chapters are kind of but then it starts getting into the actual filming and the stories of the rest of the cast, and it's really interesting. He's not the best writer, so the writing is not like super enthralling. But when you get to the stories of like the first day of shooting where they have to do the fire swamp, or like the first day that he's filming with Fezzik and Andre the Giant just lets out a huge fart that like rumbles the set and they can't continue filming because everyone's laughing so hard. It's just like...
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's some pretty solid gems in there. So
never heard of that story.
Yeah. It's good, and then it's worth a read for sure. especially if you like The Princess Bride half as much as I do, which is a lot. So that. And then on the music front, there's a fairly new band called Kongos. You've probably heard their song Come With Me Now, which will probably be starting in the background somewhere around here. It's a pretty driven song that's been in some commercials and stuff already. The band themselves are South African descent. They're four sons of a South African singer, songwriter, I guess, based out of Arizona, and they are kind of, I guess their main genre, I would describe them as like a post-grungy, but they have all sorts of different influences, because they've got like this super reggae song that's pretty fun, but they're really good if you're into a little heavier stuff. Bought the album on a whim because that song was stuck in my head, and the Pandora station that I made from it was doing some good things. So,
yeah, I like that song. I've heard that one.
Yeah, the rest of it's pretty good too. There's other stuff that will get stuck in your head even more than that. So, yeah, a lot of stuff to go check out. Pretty big recommendation.
And more next time. I'll have more TV shows and a book for next time.
Nice. Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one who's behind on their recommendations.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll probably have some by next time, too.
Well, I missed out on the last show, so.
Yeah, that's true. Bought a bunch of comics and a few video games between then and now. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this up then. All right, so as always, thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, you can find us at thecinemasters.blogspot.com. You can also shoot us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes and like us on Facebook. Those are good ways to get a hold of us and let us know how we're doing, what things we can do better, and suggestions for future movies, which is exciting. So, yeah, that's that. Next time we will be doing something along the lines of Oscar-nominated animated movies. So that should be interesting. Excited about that. After that, we don't know yet, and we got a few good ideas in the works, so we'll let you know then. As always, I am Daniel James.
I'm Jacob Lynn.
And I'm Talik Rauch.
And that, my friends, was a podcast.
Boom.
Indeed.
And over here, our bass player, the Duke of Spook. Dr. Shock, man with no tan, please say hello to death himself, the Grim Reaper! You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper. I love show business.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been to the past. We've been to the future. We've been all around the afterlife. And you know, Ted, the best place to be is here. The best time to be now. And all we can say is, let's rock!
The Cinemasters Podcast is an Autological Media Productions podcast. Leave us feedback at thecinemasters.blogspot.com or send us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Please like us on Facebook and rate and review us on iTunes. And if you want to check out our other shows, go to almproductions.net. As always, thank you for listening. What do you guys want to do next time?
Oh, shit. I don't know. What's the thing to do?
Man.
Are there any movies in theaters that are coming out next?
Not quite.
Give me an excuse to go see Cinderella, because Cinderella actually looks kind of good.
I don't know if I'm going to see it.
But I just love all those people.
It's literally Cinderella. There's nothing new about it.
I know.
And they photoshopped or they like CG'd her waist to make it obnoxiously skinny.
Nice.
Because, you know, she wasn't skinny enough. So like that in itself is enough to make me not really want to go.
Everybody knows the average Hollywood actress is not nearly skinny enough, Dan.
This is true.
That is true.
So make her like physically lose the weight. Don't fake it. Like you said, practical effects are better.
Yeah. Christian Bale. Just go ask him.
Yeah, exactly. God, that was creepy.